Well, this morning we are continuing in our second sermon on Adventism, or revisiting Adventism. That was a couple of weeks ago. I shared with you why I am a Seventh-day Adventist. Do you remember back a couple of weeks ago? I gave you three reasons why I am a Seventh-day Adventist. Can you help me out? What? Community? What else? The Adventist message and mission. So, three reasons why I am a Seventh-day Adventist. I was speaking to a pastor friend of mine. He's an older gentleman. And I was telling him about our series on revisiting Adventism and what my plans were. And he told me of an interview that he saw a while back. You guys are familiar with Art Linkletter? Yeah, I guess he was watching Art Linkletter and he saw this interview. He had this little boy, this kid who identified himself as a Seventh-day Adventist. And of course, Linkletter was curious and wondered, well, what's an Adventist? To which the kid replied, well, we go to church on Saturday, we don't eat meat, and we don't like Catholics. Now, I just sort of cringed when I heard that story. Because for starters, it's not true, at least of this Seventh-day Adventist, and I hope it's not true of any Seventh-day Adventist, anybody in our church. The truth is that I am deeply indebted to a number of Catholics who have had a profound impact on my spiritual journey. A lot of Catholic authors, folks like Brennan Manning, you might be familiar, or Henry Nguyen, just some top-of-the-line authors who have hogged a significant amount of my reading time and a lot of space on my bookshelves. And of course, other authors across the denominational spectrum. So we don't dislike Catholics, as that young boy would say. Now, last time as we were studying, we talked about why I am a Seventh-day Adventist. And today, we want to look at Adventism through a much broader perspective, through a lens, I guess the lens that looks at other Christian faiths and their traditions. Now, do you have one of these inserts in your bulletin? Okay. You'll need to have it out because I thought it would be fun to start out with a quiz. So I hope you are game for this quiz. I'm curious to know the first question, in terms of percentage of Adventist doctrine, what do we share? What percentage of Adventist doctrine do we share with all other faiths? Catholics and Protestants alike. Write it down there and share it with the person next to you. What percentage of Adventist doctrine do we share with all other faiths, Catholics and Protestants alike? Okay, so write down your answer there. And then I want you to take a guess at the second question. What percentage of Adventist doctrine would you say we share at least with some other denominations? So, for example, we believe, as the Baptists do, in the doctrine of baptism by immersion. And we might believe, as the Catholics do, in the Trinity, for example. So, what percentage of Adventist doctrine do we share with some other denominations? Okay, so just venture a guess there. And then, the third question, what percentage of Adventist doctrines would you guess to be uniquely Adventist? Okay? So, let's grade the quiz. First question, what percentage of Adventist doctrine do we share with all other faiths, Catholics and Protestants alike? What was some answers out there? 75? 80? Who said 50? Well, Don is the closest one. It's 52%. According to a book, An Inside Look at Seventh-day Adventists, which is an official publication of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, we share 52% of Adventist doctrines with all other denominations. The second question, what percentage of Adventist doctrine would you say we share at least with some other denominations? The examples I gave you, baptism by immersion with Baptists, the Trinity with the Catholics. Any answers? 95, 70, 85. Okay, well, according to this book, again, An Inside Look at Seventh-day Adventists, the author suggests that is 39%. And if you wanted to get the answer to the last question, you would have to add the number, the percentages for the first two questions and subtract it from 100, leaving 9% of Adventist doctrines as uniquely Adventist, according to this book, An Inside Look to Seventh-day Adventist. So 9% of Adventist doctrine being uniquely Adventist. And we'll look at that next week. But today I want to focus on the 91% that we share with all other denominations or some other denominations. Okay, 91%. And I want to look at three different groups. And you can see in your insert, if you've looked ahead, we're going to look at Catholics, Evangelicals, and Charismatics. And I'll share briefly what I appreciate about all these faith traditions, beginning with the Catholics. Now, if you were to get on the internet and go to www.catholic.com, you would find on there, and I assume that's an official website of the Catholic Church, you would find on there a page that talks about Seventh-day Adventists and talks a little bit about the relationship between the two churches. And you have there in your bulletin insert what it says. Seventh-day Adventists agree with many Catholic doctrines, including the Trinity, Christ's divinity, the virgin birth, the atonement, a physical resurrection of the dead, and Christ's coming, second coming. They use a valid form of baptism. Now, this is a Catholic website, and you know, they baptize by aspersion. We baptize through immersion. And they're saying we use a valid form of baptism. They believe in original sin and reject the evangelical teaching that one can never lose one's salvation no matter what one does. In other words, we correctly reject one saved, always saved. Now, I will tell you, if you have the opportunity to get online and you look at this website, not everything on that website is as nice as this. There are some other things that are not so nice, but they at least acknowledge that we do share some things in common between the two faiths. And in spite of what some kid might have told Art Linkletter, we don't hate Catholics. We're not antagonistic toward Catholics either. But there are a lot of similarities in a lot of places where we do share a common ground. George Vandeman, this is a book that's 20 years old, What I Like About Lutherans and Catholics and Baptists. I think it was published in 1986. It's out of print now. But I'm citing him here, and I agree with him. There's so much I personally appreciate about the Catholics. In a world of material progress and social change, moral values have eroded. But the Roman Catholic Church stands for morality and decency, and most Catholics honor the sanctity of human life along with many conservative Protestants. I also like Catholics because of their many radiant examples of genuine Christian love, and I appreciate their sincere love for Jesus and their growing interest in the Scriptures. I of course, can agree with that, and I share those same sentiments. Now, of course, the Catholic Church does not represent a perfect church. There is no perfect church. And of course, we could cite problems that have been reported in the news of sexual misconduct by the priest, and we could go into the history and look at the abuses of power through the combination of church and state and the corrupt system and the corrupt leaders at times. No church is perfect, and we could go through that. But there are a lot of great things that we share with Catholics and that we can appreciate about this denomination. Personally, I think my first tangible snapshot of the gospel came from Catholics. Now, I went to Catholic school. Anybody else go to Catholic school here? Okay. I went to Catholic school for 8 years. And my first picture of the gospel came from Catholics. And actually, I remember this story from a communion Sabbath when I was a child. And the pastor was telling the story of a Franciscan priest, Father Maximilian Kolbe. And Father Kolbe was at an Auschwitz death camp. And often you could have heard him singing and praising God while he was in his cell. You could have heard him praying for the guards and for the other prisoners. He would share his meager rations of food with others that he just deemed more hungrier than he. A real bright light in a dark place, if you will, Father Kolbe. And so one day, a prisoner escaped from the camp. And so the SS guards, what they would do when somebody would escape, they would come into where they kept all the prisoners, and they would take 10 people. And those 10 people had to pay for the misdeed of the one prisoner that had escaped. They would have to give their lives. Now, one young man among the 10 stepped forward and was just begging for his life. "Please, I have a family, I have kids, and more than anything in this world, I just would like to see them again and be with them again. Would you please spare my life?" At that moment, Father Colby stepped up, and the SS guard barked at him, "What are you doing?" And Father Colby said, "Well, if it's okay with you, I would like to die for this man. I don't have a family. I don't have any kids. I won't ever have any kids. You know, take my life instead. I would like to die for this man and take his place." Now, the SS officer was stunned, just speechless. Didn't know what to say, what to think, that a man would want to die for another. And he just kind of stood there in silence for a while and finally uttered two words: "Request granted." And so they threw Father Colby into a cell, and he actually died of starvation. They didn't feed him. And eventually, along with the starvation, they gave him a lethal injection of some sort, and that's how he died. But up until the day of his death, you could hear him singing and praising God and praying for the guards and praying for the prisoners. Just an absolute bright light in this dark place. And I can remember this story at a young age and thinking, wow, that's a picture of what Jesus did for me on the cross. So my first tangible snapshot of the gospel coming from Father Colby. And we're all familiar with that text in John 15. Greater love has no man than this, than he lay down his life for his friends. John 15:13. So as early as I can remember, that's the picture of the gospel that I had. And I have the Catholics to thank for that amazing story of grace. And there are a lot of other things that I can appreciate about the Catholics. But let's move on to evangelicals. When you talk about evangelicals, it's really difficult to really figure out who you are talking about. And as I did my research, I have there noted for you Mark Knoll, a professor and historian at Wheaton College. He says, "Evangelical is a slippery word because it can be used to designate certain religious groups or denominations, but then it can also transcend denominations." So there would be evangelical Presbyterians, evangelical Episcopalians, evangelical Lutherans, and so on. And so he goes on to say that the word evangelical is plastic. It's not precise. And so the question we are left is, well, who are evangelicals? And we hear a lot about evangelicals in the political news these days, don't we? Yeah. Okay. So the question is, well, who are evangelicals? Well, as I did my research, I discovered there are three basic tenets, and I have those listed there for you that you can fill in as we go along. Number one, evangelicals believe that the Bible is authoritative. So, as we mentioned last week, this world that's drifting in moral relativism, evangelicals believe that the Bible is the true source of truth, an anchor that we can hold on to and guide our lives by. So they believe that the Bible is authoritative. Scriptures are God-breathed and useful for teaching and rebuking. The second tenet that they believe is that we must be born again. And based on John 3:3, what does Jesus say to Nicodemus? "Unless you are born again, you cannot enter the kingdom of God." And so they believe that we must be born again. Finally, they believe that the church is called to spread the gospel, to evangelize. Matthew 28, "Go baptizing in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit." So these three tenets of evangelicals, that the Bible is authoritative, that we must be born again, and that the church is called to spread the gospel, to evangelize. Now, as you look at these three major tenets that evangelicals embrace, I think it's safe to say that Seventh-day Adventists rest in the sweet spot of that theology. What do you think? We believe that the Bible is authoritative. We believe that we must be born again. And we certainly believe in the gospel commission of Matthew 28 to go into all the world. And then the end will come. Correct? So we fall into the sweet spot of that theology. Now often, the poster boys, if you will, for evangelicals are very outspoken. The poster boys for evangelical faith. And you've heard a lot about evangelicals in the political news and the inflammatory statements that have been made. Now, last week I was talking to a friend that she works with Sarah. And this friend of ours, she's, I guess you would say she's agnostic. She believes in a higher being, but we're just kind of left to do as we would. And she brought up the conversation, she sparked it, about evangelicals, and I think what sparked it was the comment made this week by Pat Robertson, that he, in his personal prayer retreat, he was told by God that there would be a tsunami or a great disaster in the Pacific Northwest this year. And so she brought up that statement, and how is it that, you know, you Christians can say, give statements like that and try to win over people to your cause, or other statements. And she quoted some of these others that I want to share with you. Again, from Pat Robertson, you probably heard this and have seen it before, speaking on the Prophet Muhammad. This man was an absolute wild-eyed fanatic. He was a robber and a brigand. And to say that these terrorists distort Islam, they're carrying out Islam. Now that's a rather inflammatory statement from Pat Robertson. Another one she shared was of Pastor Jerry Vines. Islam was founded by Muhammad, a demon-possessed pedophile who had 12 wives, and his last one was a 9-year-old girl. Or Jimmy Swaggart, who a couple of years ago said, you want to know what we ought to do? We ought to take every single Muslim student in every college in this nation and ship them back to where they came from. And so she's sharing all these statements with me, throwing them all at me, and, well, what do you say? Well, Manny, why is it that you Christians, you know, if you're supposed to be so loving, then why do you make these blanket statements about these other people? If you truly are trying to work for the cause of Christ, then why make these statements that she thought are not helpful to the cause of Christ? And, you know, I have to agree, they're not helpful to the cause of Christ. And I think we can find many more statements like that about other things, a whole list of other topics. But friends, does God need arrogant, judgmental people to carry out His work? Not the type of people that He needs. He needs, what did Jesus say? By this shall all men know you are my disciples if you have love for one another. And I believe, you can quote me on this, that we ought to stand firm and unapologetically and hold to what this book has to say. But we speak the truth and we speak it in love. Okay? We stand firm and unapologetically to what God's book says to us. Now, I think as Adventists, sometimes we can fall into that as well. If we're not careful, we can come across as arrogant and judgmental as that young kid. We go to church on Saturday, we don't eat meat, and we don't like Catholics. Now, God, I don't believe God needs decaffeinated, smoke-free, non-alcoholic little terrorists running around ripping up people, folks. God bless vegetarians that eat people. Seriously. If you are my disciples, you shall be known by love for one another. We speak the truth, but we speak it in love because it doesn't help the cause of Christ. Again, like the Catholics, evangelicals are not a perfect church as well. And you know, I have to pray sometimes that I'm not judgmental against judgmental evangelicals. Really, because I can be judgmental. I was watching a prayer conference, a pastor's conference a while back, and they had 75 preachers, the most famous preachers in America, and they had Billy Graham and Franklin Graham and Joel Osteen and Rick Warren, the Purpose-Driven Life, all these pastors, and they had just one sermon to preach. really, it was a, if you had an opportunity to watch that or be part of that, it was a real spiritual feast. And they all had one sermon to preach, and I was sitting watching them, wasn't able to watch all of them. And Jerry Falwell was about to come up and speak, and as soon as I knew he was coming up, I thought, well, I'm going to turn the TV off, because I don't want to listen to Jerry Falwell. But for some reason, I kept the television on, and I went ahead and I listened to all of what Jerry Falwell had to say. And just sitting there and watching him through his whole sermon, my whole attitude changed towards this man. Because it seemed to me that he was a sincerely honest, humble servant of God. Now, Jerry Falwell has made many inflammatory statements in the media, especially about homosexuals. But what really got me as he spoke was as he shared about this close friend of his that was dying of AIDS, who just happened to be a homosexual, that he was caring for personally. And you can tell that he was moved with feeling and with emotion as he told about this close friend of his that was dying with AIDS. And as I turned the TV off, as he ended, I thought, Lord, guard my heart, guard my spirit, that I would not be judgmental toward other people. Rather, that we would speak the truth in love, words of harmony and peace. Amen? A third major faith group that we can talk about are charismatics. Now, I remember reading a book on charismatics when I was in college. It was a book on the holiness movement. And it was a class on world religions. And one of the requirements was you had to go to these other church services and participate in the worship service and see the different dynamics that are involved in these other church services. Well, I visited several Pentecostal holiness churches, and you have your pick, Assembly of God and Pentecostal holiness and so on. And so I went to several of these churches, and when I got there, people were speaking in tongues, and I didn't know what to do. It was really my first experience in something like that. People were speaking in tongues. Some people were dancing in the aisles. Other people were dancing in the pews. And then the snakes. I'm just joking. But that's what I was expecting. That's what I was expecting. I was expecting snakes. But a whole lot of dynamics that I wasn't familiar with and just astounded by what was going on. But I came away from that experience with a couple of things that I can appreciate from the charismatic church. And I want to share this statement from George Vandeman, and again, I agree with his sentiments. There's so much I appreciate about my charismatic friends. I like their warmth. That's a good thing to have, their love, their enthusiasm. Charismatics have contributed much to the spontaneity and joy of worship. Now, as I read that, I thought, how true. You know, I did a study not too long ago on prayer and specifically on pastors, and I shared this with the Bible study group on Wednesday a couple of weeks ago, specifically about pastors and prayer, that if they have consecrated themselves all week and prayerfully worked on their message, that as they are preaching, there are angels whispering thoughts into their minds. And there's a spontaneity in that, and that's very much biblical. And so I can appreciate the spontaneity and joy of worship. And in this age of secular self-sufficiency, they remind us that we are dependent beings, dependent upon God's Spirit in order to fulfill the purpose of our lives. Another thing I like about charismatics is their prayer experience. When they pray, they really pray, and they expect answers from their Father in heaven. And I like that as well. And we have been studying the last couple of weeks in our Sabbath school lesson about what? The gifts of the Spirit. And that's something that I came away with from my experience in the charismatic church, that they have placed such an emphasis on the gifts of the Spirit, which is very biblical. And we have been reading texts in our Sabbath school lesson in 1 Corinthians 12, where the manifestation of the Spirit is given to every man to profit who? With all. For the common good of the church. And Paul there talks about the gift of tongues and the gift of prophecy, gift of leadership and mercy and so on. And he says these all come from one and the self-same Spirit. And it's for the common good of the church. And as Seventh-day Adventists, we embrace that doctrine, do we not? Gifts of the Spirit. That we're all given gifts to profit the common good of the church. So again, like the Catholics and the evangelicals, charismatics are not perfect. I have had many charismatics say to me, because I don't speak in tongues, I must not be saved. I have had others say to me, just recently, about 4 months ago at Doctor's Hospital in Augusta, I was praying for a man, and this person who pronounced himself to be from the Pentecostal Holiness Church tells me the reason that this man is not being healed is because of my faith, that I don't believe I can heal him. And so in essence, after that man passed away, it was my fault that this man had died, because my faith was lacking. So there are many things that I disagree with charismatics. Many things I disagree with the a lot of evangelicals and the way that they put themselves out there. And there are a lot of things I disagree with the Catholics. But again, with the charismatics, I take away an emphasis on the gifts of the Spirit and the joy and spontaneity of worship. And so as Adventists, we have 91% of our beliefs that we share with these other Christian faiths. And as we go forth and carry out the gospel commission of Matthew 28 and spreading the gospel, then we ought to do it mindfully and humbly and patiently, bearing in love, in truth and in love. Now, the question that I have for you is, what would God have to say to us as we think about our place as Adventists in the bigger Christian picture? And the text I want to share with you, and I think Jesus would say this to us, is in Ephesians 4, chapter 2, verse 6. And I think as we listen and read these words, we ought to let them seep deep within our soul. And what God would say to us as we think about our place in the bigger Christian picture. I want to share these words with you from the New International Version. Be completely humble and gentle. Be patient, bearing with one another in love. Make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. There is one body and one Spirit, just as you were called to one hope when you were called. One Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is over all and through all and in all. So God reminds us that there is one church of Jesus Christ, bound by love. And so he tells us to be gentle and humble and patient and bearing with one another in love. I had this story that I wanted to share with you, and I could not find it in my files, so I tried to remember the gist of it. It's a story of Ralph. And Ralph grew up in a rough part of town in Chicago. And he lived on the streets. And he would travel each Sunday morning about 3 miles to another part of town, 3 miles away from where he lived, and he would go to this particular church. Every Sunday he would make that long trek. One particular Sunday it had snowed, and tremendous amount of snow, and they even thought about canceling the service that Sunday morning. But they opened their doors regardless, and sure enough, there was Ralph. He showed up on that Sunday morning. He walked those 3 miles across town, and he arrived at church that morning. It was that same morning that a deacon asked him, "Well, Ralph, why do you come to this church?" "Because I counted up that there are 20 churches that you walk past as you come to this church. What is it that drives you? What attracts you to come to this church and pass up all these churches as you come to our church every Sunday?" To which the kid replied, "Well, I come here because I've discovered that here people even like a fella like me." And that's the church of Christ. We are to be gentle and humble, patient and bearing in love, remembering there's one body, one Spirit, one Father who is in all, with all, and through all. And we ought to be Christians, Seventh-day Adventist Christians, that proclaim the truth and proclaim the truth in love to these other folks that we are trying to reach, the unbelievers of this world, those who have not come to know Jesus and what He has done for them. May we be mindful in the way that we share the gospel. May we be thoughtful and represent the gospel to them as Jesus would want us to. Amen.